You all have heard of Gustaji, you know, who was with Baba for many years, and Baba gave him silence, and he died in silence. In the big, Gustaji had some brothers too, older than him, young, some younger. So once I asked Gustaji as to how he came in contact with the perfect masters of the age and with Meher Baba. So that which I can now recollect, I'll reproduce. He told me that in the beginning, of course, he was employed by the excise department during the time when the British ruled over India. There were distilleries, you see, distilled hard liquor and all that, and they used to store, you see. The distilleries had to store all that they produced in the stores, and it was not to be sold unless and until the inspector, excise inspector, would permit them to sell this. So he was in charge of one of these stores. So he worked there for some time with the distillery people. And then he didn't like the idea, you see, of fiddling with hard liquor, so to say. And so he left the place and came to Bombay, and he found a job as a clerk with one who was importing printed pictures from Germany. You know, in India, we used to have those litho prints from foreign countries. Even the pictures of Ram and Krishna and Zoroaster and Jesus and others, you see, they were not printed in India, but they were printed in Germany. Yeah. And they were being imported into India and sold to the public by millions, you see. So one of the importers was Gustaji's employer, you see, and Gustaji was working there as a clerk. And it so happened that while being employed there by him, he took a fancy to learn playing harmonium, Gustaji. So he had to attend some harmonium classes, you see, where the teacher taught him harmonium. There, in that classroom, he finds a picture, you see, of somebody who was quite a stranger to him. He sees that big picture there, and he asks his teacher as to who he is. He says, well, he's Sai Baba. Sai Baba? What's Sai Baba, he asks. Well, he's a master, you see. Where does he live? He says, well, he lives somewhere near Pune, a place called Shirdi. Oh, he says, is he a Mohammedan or a Hindu? He says, one cannot know, you see. Nobody is sure of his caste or his religion, you see. Nobody is sure of his religion. What does he say? He doesn't say anything about religion. He just speaks about love of God. That was his first introduction to Sai Baba, Jim. That's how he contacted Sai Baba for the first time, through that picture. But that impression remained lasting, you see. And the word Sai Baba all the time just haunted him, you see. And he had made plans so often to go to him, but because of preoccupation and because of many other things, maybe the time was not ripe, he couldn't go. All of a sudden, one day, his younger brother comes to him and says, Gustaji, do you know, have you heard of Sai Baba? He says, yes, I have heard of Sai Baba. He says, would like to go to him? Yes, I'm planning quite a long time to go to him. Why do you ask me that? He says, well, I'm going there. If you want, I can accompany you. I can take you to him. I have been there once or twice. He said, it would be nice. I want to go. So he took leave from his employer and straight away went to Sai Baba first. Well, he was in the presence of Sai Baba. No sooner Sai Baba saw him, you see, he put forth his hand. Sai Baba put out his hand, says, "Well, how much have you got in your pocket? Part with it." So Gustaji, of course, parted with some of his rupees. He says, well, give the rest, the balance. The balance is with you." He says, "But..." Well, Gustaji didn't know what to do, because if he were to part with that balance, how would he go back, you see? Well, it was the first meeting, he didn't know, he was awestruck. He never expected that the master would ask for money. He thought that master would ask for something like bananas or some sweets or something like that. And here is a master who asks not only for money but for every pie that is in his pocket. It was strange to him. Well, he had to give it. And he gave all that he possessed. And then he stayed for some time with his brother, you see, just a few hours. And then his brother brought him back to Bombay. After a while, you see, a month or two, he got another urge to go there. On his own he went. But this time he was wary about it. He had his wallet with him, but there he made divisions, you see. So before he approached Sai Baba, he gave that wallet to somebody, you see, and says that this is the money for my return fare. You keep it with you there. And then he approached Sai Baba, you see. And then Sai Baba appeared to be happy to see him again, you see, and looked at him and says, again the same routine was followed. Sai Baba put forth his hand, demanding all the money from him. And that was his routine. Not that it was just because Gustaji was there, or anybody who went there. Almost with everybody. Sai Baba used to wear a long gown, you see. And the longest of the thing in the gown, you see, was his pocket. Right from the hip, it would just go down to his ankle almost, to the hem of the very long pocket. And every day visitors would come and he would put forth his hand, you see, and he would collect and put the thing in the pocket. You see. Before he retired, he would just turn his pocket outside, you see, what do you call it, inside out, and there wouldn't be a pie there. What would he do with the money? Well, he would just distribute to all those who were around him, you see. All of them, that included anybody. If Gustaji was there also, if he wished, he would just throw some coins there, you see. And that was his routine, you see. Sai Baba didn't take a pie from that. On the contrary, he had five houses according to Gustaji that were fixed. Every time, and when it was lunch time for him to beg, he would go out and stand in front of the five houses there. And each one was deputed to give a raw onion, unpeeled, and a fresh bhakri, hot from the oven. You know the bhakris that you are given here sometimes, jawar bhakri? Mm-hmm. So five bhakris and five onions would be brought by Sai Baba to his place. And he would share with the ones who were very close to him. And that was his diet. But then there were others, very rich, who would bring delicious dishes for him, and they would just put before him for him to take and partake of, and all this would be put there, you see. So Sai Baba noticed all this during his second visit when he was there, you see. And what he noticed was that these dishes would be kept there, and at the appointed time a curtain would be drawn, you see, hiding the dishes and Sai Baba behind the curtain. But within 5 minutes there would be a clap and the curtain would be drawn aside and the dishes were then distributed to the people around. Sai Baba would just put his finger and lick from each dish, you see. That would be a sort of an acceptance of the offering. That's how Sai Baba lived, you see. Then Gustaji noticed, all this is what Gustaji tells me about the curriculum there, because it comes in his story, you see. Then Gustaji noticed another thing. He said, you know what Sai Baba, he asked me, do you know what Sai Baba used for his bed? I said, no. Well, says, there were people, you see, the mill owners, they would come, you see, for certain booms and all that. And what they would bring, you see, they would bring bolts of cloth, you see, plain white cloth like this. And they would be just heaped there, you see. So on a heap of all the bolts, you see, there he would just lie down for the night. And he says, do you know that he had two resting places? One, and both the resting places were close by. One was a temple, and another was a mosque. So alternate nights he would be visiting the mosque, and then the next night would be the temple for his restroom. And in both the places there would be these bolts there where he would lie down. So he was happy with his visit to Sai Baba for the second time. With the money he kept with his friend there, he went back home. And he continued with his job. But somehow or other, he was not happy with all this. The urge prompted him to go again and again, again and again. And then, one day he goes there, you see, and says, Sai Baba asks him, can you help me with 225 rupees? It so happened that Gustaji had with him 200 rupees altogether. He continued with that system, keeping the railway fare away from Sai Baba, you see. So, not counting the railway fare, he did have 200 rupees with him to be offered to Sai Baba if he asked more or anything like that. So he offered 200 rupees and he said that he had just 200 rupees. He says, then beg for 25 rupees and bring. So Gustaji went round, you see. First of all, he had that money, about 10 rupees or so for his railway fare. So he collected that from the person and then he begged for 15 rupees more and offered it to Sai Baba. Sai Baba was very happy about it. Well, he wouldn't say anything to Gustaji. Gustaji says that he was the most neglected person there, you see, most unwanted person by the crowd over there. But he did, he had a fascination, you see, some sort of attraction that attracted him towards Sai Baba, that drew him all the time, you see, closer and closer to Sai Baba. But Sai Baba remained completely indifferent towards Gustaji. Then it so happened that the time had come. And Gustaji was prompted from within that he should now no more return to Bombay but to live permanently near Sai Baba. He now knew what was the requirement and all that, so he packed a trunk full of clothes and had a blanket and other things, you see, and then he went well prepared, you see, with the money that he had. So whenever he kept his trunk there outside, there were no built-up things or anything. Sai Baba was, there were two things. Either Sai Baba would be in the outside the temple or there, the mosque. Another thing that he witnessed there during his visits with Sai Baba, that whenever Sai Baba wanted to go out for toilet, you see, there would be a procession, a band would be played, you see, for him to go. He was led there for that, you see, with a band and all that. I don't know how a person feels at ease, you see, for being taken to a toilet in a procession with a band, you see. But that was the custom, and Gustaji was amazed to see that. And then Sai Baba would spend some time there in the open, in front of the people there, you see. But people would leave him from a distance, you see. They would just keep there and be seated and chat among themselves and all that. And when somebody spotted Sai Baba there ready to again return, then again the band would play, you see, pong, you know, that one peculiar type of horn that is used, you see, for welcome and for some auspicious occasions. And that horn would sound the beginning of his return journey. And then the other drums would be played and cymbals would be played and people would start singing bhajans and dancing, and in a procession he would be brought back to the place. Then after a while and all that, then that would be time for Sai Baba, after a little discourse and all that, then Sai Baba would go for begging, you see. Sometimes he would pass round chilam, you see, of tobacco that would go round with the people. He would share with the others also. And that's how the day would be passed. There would be aarti sangha of Sai Baba and so forth. So one day now, Gustaji decides to go there to live permanently with Sai Baba. He goes. He has his trunk. He has his clothes. He has all the requirements with him there. He places them outside there, you see, and goes to Sai Baba for the first darshan now. And what does he find, you see, when he returns? No trace of all that. You see. Absolutely any, all the things that he had on his head, you see. The cap, the coat, the shirt, the pajama under it. Sadra used to wear, you know, Zoroastrians have to wear that sadra, that thin thing that Baba always wore, you see, but not right down to the ankles. Usually Zoroastrians wear right up to the waist, you see. So the cap, he said, the coat he had, the shirt, the sadra, the pyjama underneath, and a trouser over it, a pair of trousers, and his slippers. That was his belonging now. All the money, the trunk, and everything was lost, pilfered. Well, he said, now that I am determined to stay near Sai Baba, well, take it as a boon that I haven't to just guard these things, you see. All the time my attention would be drawn towards my belongings, you see, instead of my being with Sai Baba. So he took it as an auspicious sign to start a different world, you see, a different life now near Sai Baba. So he remained with that, you see. And what about his food? Nobody offered him food there. He remained like that. Any time there would be some distribution through Sai Baba, a piece of sweet or a banana thrown or something like that, that was his meal. Where to get water? There was no water nearby. So he had to go at a distance, you see, of about 2 furlongs. There was a spring there. So he would go when he would feel thirsty and just with his hands, suck water out of it, you see, or lap, if you want to say. Then he would be back near Sai Baba, and his duty, Sai Baba treated him with complete indifference. All that he would do would be partake in all the things that would happen and just remain sometimes sitting, reclined to a post, or standing. Days passed by, and Gustaji used to get thinner and thinner and frailer without food and all that. So one day, when he must have fasted for many, many days, weeks, fasted in this sense, just a morsel may have been thrown here and there, you see, like somebody throws to a dog. So one day, when he was feeling absolutely weak and exhausted, he couldn't even, it was so difficult for him to go to the spring to lap water. So Sai Baba turns, without turning towards him. He says, you people are really callous people, you see. Don't you know that I am starving for so many days? And you have no regard, you come here with all due love and reverence and respect. And don't you know the object of reverence and love and respect is being starved like this? Then he would look at Gustaji, you see, for some time. And you come here, you see, trying to ask me for a boon and all that, you see. And you have no regard for my starvation, you see. And again he would look at Gustaji. People knew that this man has come and nobody has offered him. No sooner the session was over, Gustaji was just drowned, so to say, with a downpour of invitations, you see. And he did not know how to approach them and what to do. And he was dragged some here, and then he was dragged by somebody else, you see. And that's how he fell sick. He never had fallen sick, you see, because people forced food through down his throat, you see. And he couldn't know, and he had eaten so much, you see, that he couldn't even breathe that day. And he would say that he wouldn't want to eat or anything, but he said, no, Sai Baba was very upset about it. And we are here, you see, and we have to and he fell ill and nobody took care of him. He started shitting like anything, see, diarrhea and vomiting, and he ran temperature and all that. For many days he just remained like that, just taking Sai Baba's name there. When he recovered, then again they had forgotten about it all, you see. And again he started starving. So likewise, he passed his days over there. But then later on, there were people who came to know that he needs some help. So he was given, you see. There were regular houses where he was invited once a week or twice a week, like that. And that's how he divided his meals among the different houses, you see. Then it so happened, he says, that when it was time, then there was another Chota Baba near Sai Baba, he says. When Bada Baba was there, there were two Babas, you see, Chota Baba and Bada Baba. Bada means big Baba, and Chota means small Baba. And they had their own ways of living near Sai Baba, you see. They would command, they would order things, you see. And I was treated like a slave there, you see, sometimes. And these both, you see, were being affected, you see, spiritually. And they would do and command and order anything, you see. And I, being a frail person, sometimes Gustaji says that they would order me to lift a beam, you see, and bring it over here. And how could I do? I would just try to attempt that, you see, and so forth. So there was another, you see. He had other masters also besides Sai Baba. Means these vague masters, you see. All right. Then there came a day. No, that was not spiritual master. What I say is that there were other masters to be obeyed. Not the spiritual master, of course. Sai Baba was the only one. But then there were these stray people who would order and command. A day came in 1918 when Sai Baba, you see, was feeling feverish and ran high temperature. And the one who looked after him, Sai Baba's, Gustaji witnessed this. Just he reclined towards the person who attended to him, and then on his lap he put his head, and that was the last of Sai Baba. And that's how Sai Baba dropped his body. And then, in the meantime, he would be seeing Upasani Maharaj too, Gustaji, because Upasani Maharaj was being trained, so to say, for the post now that he would have had to hold now after Sai Baba. And Sai Baba was, and Upasani Maharaj was housed in a small dilapidated temple there where nobody would want to go, because Upasani Maharaj was in a Jalali mood at the time. You know, Jalali means fiery mood. He would fire people, you see, throw stones at them, abuse them and run after them and all that. Even if somebody were to go with some food also, he wouldn't want to accept that, you see, because he was in that mood. And what happened was that so when he went there, you see, Gustaji used to go sometimes and just peep, and he would find Upasani Maharaj quietly sitting there and then come away. One day it so happened that he, when he wanted to approach Upasani Maharaj there, just from a distance, what happened? He smells, he gets a stink, you see, of human shit all around. And what he finds is that Upasani Maharaj had plastered, you see, all human shit there, so that nobody could enter, you see, even jump that distance and enter there. People would go and offer food. He didn't like that, you see, because that is the mood when you don't want anything. All what you long for is him, and nothing matters, you see. And all these are apart. There is no distraction left now, you see. But it's disturbance, you see. You see, there are two things: disturbances and distractions. A stage reaches when distractions no more distract, but distractions become disturbances, you see. So all this was a disturbance, you see, or intrusion, you may call it. And therefore he didn't want them. And how to avoid these people? In spite of his running after them, hitting them, throwing stones, they would come. The only thing to avoid them was to spread human shit, you see. Nobody would want to jump over that. And a big area was covered there. And he was so intrigued, you see, Gustaji, when he told me about this. Then, after Upasana, Sai Baba dropped his body. He was drawn before that, you see, for some time. And once or twice, Sai Baba had also given hints that, why don't you go there sometimes? So that's why Gustaji would go there and peep and come back, you see, just to keep his word, you see, because he was so frightened of Maharaj, he didn't know. After a week of staying in Shirdi, after Sai Baba dropped the body, he felt that it was no use continuing there. The hint was already given, so he went and sat outside the temple there, where Upasani Maharaj was. So he continued there, sitting there. So Upasani Maharaj was by that time almost ready. He came, he also would come out, you see, and then he would follow him, and then he would drive him out. So again he would follow him, and so forth. So that's how he got in contact of Upasani Maharaj. And he was there at the time, you see, staying with Upasani Maharaj. In the meantime, of course,
how did Gustaji hear of Baba? Did he hear this before?
No, no. Then what happened was, while he was with Upasani Maharaj, Baba would go there, you see. Baba was there, going and coming and going and coming. And then Baba stayed there for about 6 months there. And after that, Upasani Maharaj handed over Gustaji to Baba.
When Upasani first went to Sai Baba, he was very young.
Yes, of course.
Teenager or
yeah,
something.
Not that teenager. He had married twice or something like that, you see. And he was not a teenager. No, he was quite
old. How old he was.
No, he was of a good age.
Gustaji was there when Baba first met Sai Baba and Baba said Sarvachitaya.
Well, I don't remember that.
Sai Baba said what?
Parvati.
Mani says that Mani remembers that Gustaji was there at the time when Baba, for the first time, visited Sai Baba before Sai Baba dropped the body, and when Baba visited Sai Baba, and when Baba prostrated before Sai Baba all of a sudden shouted out "Parvardigar," you see, and Gustaji bore witness to it and said that he was there present at the time. Then what happened naturally, Gustaji was with Upasani Maharaj and Baba would be there, and Baba was there for nearly 6 months there. One day when it was time for Baba to leave Upasani Maharaj, so there was, you know the story there now, it's mentioned there, I think in the reminiscences or somewhere in Listen Humanity. You can pick it up from there. So otherwise it will become more confusing. So at the time, not only Gustaji, but there were some others also who were told by Upasani Maharaj in presence of the crowd, all the people who were staying there, that he has given charge to Mehrwan, that he holds the key now, and that they should adhere to him and follow him through thick and thin. So one of them was Gustaji also, who came with Baba. So that's the story of Gustaji. Gustaji was told not to leave Mehrwan.
Who was the other one?
After, and I was driving the car, Baba was sitting by my side, and we could not drive fast, you see, and get out of the town. And Baba asked me, what's the matter? Why is the crowd? Where is the crowd going? You see? So I just slowed down the car and asked the people, you see, what's the matter? Anything wrong in the town or anything? He says, no, we are going for the urs of a certain saintly person, a master, you see. Where is that? This is on the outskirts of the town. And then naturally we had to follow the crowd and go through the crowd and just make a lot of use of our horn, you see, and all that, say honking and all that. And then when we approached, you see, the outskirts, all of a sudden I find Baba sitting by my side, you see, just shaking like jellyfish, you see, or all the seat, you see, and I just turn my head and find Baba having a very hearty laugh. But because he was observing silence, I couldn't hear him laugh, but I could feel the shaking going on, you see. And so I looked at him, and then I just said, "Is there anything wrong, Baba?" I said, so Baba said, just, he pointed out, you see, at the mausoleum, that big shrine there, says, "Can you see the man there with that particular type of a cap in that color?" I said, "Yes." "So that man makes me laugh." I said, "What's that in that?" He says, "This whole shrine is dedicated to this one's soul, you see, when he was in his past incarnations. And now he himself comes here to bow down to his own tomb, you see, with the crowd. So that makes me laugh," he says. So our story, our, what we were just now discussing.
Yeah. A song about Baba. "Baba, black sheep, have you any wool?" Yes, sir, three bags full. One for my master, one for my Dave, one for the little boy that lives down the lane."
And this is what a Baba lover who now has two children, this is a song she sang to Baba when she was about 4 or 5 years old. She was brought up the hill in Mehrabad when we went, and that's Gaimai's mother brought the little child. The child is now
Gaimai's mother?
Erich's mother, Gaimai. So when she came up the hill to see Baba and all the family were there, and this little girl that is Erich's cousin was there, and she said, Baba said, sing a song for me. And Gaimai said, go on, sing a song. Go on, Baba says, sing a song. So the little girl sang this song. "Baba, black sheep, have you any wool?" And Baba said, "It's very good." And he caressed her chin and patted her. And then the moment Baba turned, Gaimai, that's Erich's mother, says to the little girl, "Well, why didn't you sing a Baba song? Well, why didn't you sing a Baba song? I told you to sing Baba song." And the child looked at her so hurt and said, "But I did. I sang Baba's song. I said, Baba, black sheep, have you..." Oh, by that time, and we heard it, we were so amused. It was so funny.
What about the...
You know that heaven and hell is divided by a wall. I mean, that's natural. So there was this wall between heaven and hell. And after many years, the wall fell down. A portion of the wall crumbled and fell down. So from hell, Lucifer sends a note. "When I to heaven, says, there's a bit of the wall fallen down. Kindly repair it at once." Gabriel writes back and says, well, he doesn't see why he should repair it. The wall has fallen down. All right, it was for Lucifer to repair it. And Lucifer turned, for a few days he was silent, and then he writes back and he says, "Another reminder to you, please have that wall repaired." Again, after a few days he writes back and he said, he had written to him before to say that it was not incumbent on him to repair the wall. Lucifer should do repair the wall, as it is he who saw it and is so worried and concerned over it. Let Lucifer repair the wall. A few days silence. Lucifer sends another note and says, "This is the last reminder we're sending you. you may take it as a notice, and if you don't repair the wall by such and such a time, we'll sue you for it and take the matter to court." Very promptly, Gabriel replies and says, "It's all right. We'll repair the wall because we have no lawyers on this side of the wall."
I mean, you want to test it?
Just test.
Yes. Well, we're sitting here in Mandalay's hall. Well, I thought of this little incident that happened not long after Baba dropped his body. We were, after the darshan, we had come back to Meherazad, and we were trying to function practically and carry on as knowing what Baba would want us to do, how he would want us to carry on. And Baba's presence was very much felt, but at the same time there was a great pain in the heart. And I remember this thing one evening. It was just about dusk time, and visibility was very poor. The sun had set, and I suddenly remembered I had something to show Erich, some papers that he had asked for. It was quite darkish, and I came over from the women's side and up to at the back of Erich's room where he was washing his hands. And I stood there. I said, "Erich, this letter." He got up and he went further, just outside the mast mango tree that is at the back of his room. And he said, "Come here. Come and watch." So I went out, and he said, "What do you see?" I said, I can't see anything." "What do you hear?" I said, "I hear the sheep. They're baaing." One was saying ba, they were saying ba, ba, ba. A lot of sheep. You see, the sheep that they were in our field at the back, just adjoining the mast mango tree on the west side of Erich's room. There's that field, an acre, some part of the field. And what they do here is, the villagers, when they take out their goats and sheep for grazing, what they do is they ask permission to park their sheep in your field for the night. And you allow it because their droppings are very good as manure for the field. So then you allow them to chop some branches of your tree, a thorny tree, like our babul tree, which is thorny. So, and then they make a circular ring of it, enclosure. They put all their sheep in it. So I saw that that must be it, because we could hear the sheep. And I said, "Yes, I hear the sheep." And he said, "What do you see?" I said, "Now that I've got my eyes have gotten adjusted to the light, or to the darkness rather, I can see just shapes that they were there, you know, because they're white and black and all the sheep. Nothing else?" I said, "No. No, they're just crying out, baaing. Look to the left." I said, "No." And then suddenly I saw, darker than the darkness, there was a quiet, just a shape, a silent someone. Just a shape of someone blacker than the blackness of the evening, some distance away from the sheep. And then I suddenly realized it was the shepherd. And because it was at night time, and at night time it's cool, and to protect himself from the wind, and the shepherd covers himself with a black, what we call kamli, like the kamli that made Baba's coat, the material out of which Baba's coat was made. Kamli means a hand-spun, hand-woven from the black sheep. It's a very crude, rough blanket, which is very cheap, so that inexpensive. We had that in the new life when we went, each one of us. So there he was covered with that black kamli, and not visible, but he was facing the sheep. And he said, "The sheep are crying out, and they think they're alone. They think they're in this enclosure, and they think that they are by themselves. But there is the shepherd, his eyes and his concentration, his whole thought is on the safety of his sheep, and he's watching them very silently, so that he's not even visible." And do you know, seeing that, while Erich said that, it was such a great comfort, it was like a message from Baba himself. It was as if you could see that, yes, Baba's always here. We cannot see him now, just as I could not see the shepherd, but he's very much there. And we cry out, we think we are by ourselves, but we're not. We can't see him, but he sees us, has his nazar, as he said, his eyes on us, and he's facing us and looking after us. He is very much with us. And we're sitting here in the Manjali's hall at Marazal. And there's the chair, Baba's chair before us. And Baba used to sit in the chair, and the Mandali would be sitting before him, this side and this side, or in front. And this is also where the singing programs have been held. Qawwali. The Qawwali is the singing where ghazals are sung. Ghazals are very often composed by poets, great poets, who have also had experience of the path, or have been on the path, or even have been perfect, like Hafiz, for instance, you see. So in these songs, in these true lovers of God, these songs are composed to the beloved, for the beloved. And in that, in the lines, the lover praises the beloved, complains to the beloved, berates the beloved, he very intimately but very agonizingly or very profoundly or very lovingly, and all that goes on, you see. So right here, one singing program was when Begum Akhtar, the lady whose voice Baba liked so much, she was sitting here, she came here just to sing to Baba. And there was this song, and as she was singing to Baba, she had composed a song about Baba. She sang that, and then she began to sing the regular ghazals of some of these great poets. And as she was singing this song, tears were going down her cheeks. And Baba, smiling lovingly, nodding to the tune, the words. And he gave his kerchief and told her to give to Begum Akhtar, and he gave, she wiped her eyes with that. But I remember there was this one verse, this line in it, and she was singing, in which the lover says to the beloved, who will listen to my plaints, who will answer my call, who will see to my need, you know, in love, this in agony of love, who is there, who will listen to me, who will take heed of me, of what I say. And this is the tradition of the song. And Baba, while she was saying that, Baba said, the way he gestured, I am there, I am the one who listens, making the gestures in reply. While she was saying, who will take heed of what I say, Baba said, I will listen, I will take heed, I will grant, I will do. So beautifully, the way Baba did it, no, but the lover need not complain. I'm there. I'm the one who listens to all and to the cry of the heart. I'm the one who answers. I'm there. I'm here. I listen.